You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last fall, Barbara Peterson, the aviation correspondent for Condé Nast Traveler, got a job as a screener with the Transportation Security Administration. In her 2 months working undercover at one of the nation's busiest airports, she learned how the agency's hardworking employees deal with budget cuts, outdated equipment, and record numbers of confused passengers. I'm very pleased to welcome Barbara Peterson to my show today. Hello.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, how did you get the idea to go undercover as a TSA screener?
Well, it happened last year when I was researching another article on airport security 5 years after 9/11. And it struck me that no one was telling the story from the side of the people who were actually doing the job. And what was being written about them was pretty damning. You know, they were missing weapons, that they were really no better than the minimum wage screeners they had replaced. So I really thought it would be a good time to take a look at the system.
And what was the job interview process like?
Well, I first just spotted an ad online saying part-time screeners. You know, it sounded, like very easy. I filled out an online application. And the critical part of it, though, was when I got called in for a test of my skills, which means, basically it was sort of screener light. You go in, you look at images, this one is dangerous, this one isn't. I found that very hard. In fact, I was convinced I failed. That was it. That was the end of my, short career as a screener. And once I passed that, then, it was pretty easy.
Now, why'd you think you failed? Because it's difficult to really discern what's in those bags?
Yeah, I think that the traveling public doesn't really appreciate how hard a lot of this job is. The X-ray technology that they're using at the checkpoints hasn't really changed in years. And it's very difficult to spot, for example, components of an IED, which is considered one of the biggest threats to the airline system these days. The 9/11 style attack, that's probably not going to happen again because, there have been built-in protections against it. The cockpit door has been strengthened and all that. I think what they're really concerned about now is components of a bomb being smuggled aboard.
In separate pieces, and then somebody gets on the plane and puts them all together, and then the next thing
exactly.
We have an explosion.
Yes.
Now, you mentioned this old X-ray equipment. I know when I go to the dentist, they put a lead shield on me, and then they run as far away as they can. Is there a radiation problem there?
Well, that depends on whom you ask. Before 9/11, interestingly, they did give the screeners dosimeters, so they could tell how much radiation they were getting. And they're supposed to check these machines periodically to make sure there's no leakage. Now, the federal government, says, no, we've looked into it, and it's fine. The levels are safe, not to worry, so there again, it depends on whom you ask.
Well, the federal government also doesn't want these people to unionize, so I don't know whether they have a friend in the federal government. Did they conduct a background check on you? They might have found out that you were a journalist.
Well, the application process really isn't designed to weed out freelance writers. It's actually designed to catch, criminals or incompetence or, people who just can't do the job. So I have no reason to believe they didn't conduct one. I filled out a very lengthy questionnaire. I was fingerprinted. I gave them a number of references, any one of whom could have told them what I do for a living. They never contacted any of them. But still, I'm not a security risk. So, I think they probably did some preliminary checking out.
I'm not a security risk either, but they still make me take my shoes off and do all sorts of other stuff. How rigorous was the training?
I found it very rigorous. It was very long days. We had to learn a lot within, the space of 2 weeks. And a couple of people didn't make it. A couple of people either, they quit, or two people failed. So it's not a slam dunk. It's not like the pre 9/11 days when it was basically one day and you were rushed right onto the job.
Well, there is an awareness of 9/11, and don't they kind of tell you that you're the last line of defense in the war on terror?
Oh, yes. And at times it got kind of scary. You know, they promised us, actually, at the swearing in, that we would be in danger, as they put it. I thought they were getting a little melodramatic there. But yes, I mean, really, if it gets past you, it's getting on the plane. That was the mantra they drummed into us. And, you know, it is true. Now, there are other ways, though, you can get a weapon onto the plane. And that is something I think that they haven't addressed as much as they could have. You know, there are a lot of airport employees who have access to the plane. They don't have to go through screening. That's about to change. But, there are other ways you can bring down a plane.
Well, there also are explosives. And it seems to me explosives would not really be detectable. I could just walk on to a plane with something in my jacket pocket, couldn't I? Or my trouser pocket?
That is why.
Or taped to my chest?
Well, there are ways that they have to make sure that you can't do that. But I would say that one of the reasons why we now have this sort of baggy drill, you know, and the liquids rules and all that, is because they were very concerned of exactly that scenario. And that's what the arrests in London were all about.
My guest is Barbara Petersen, the aviation correspondent for Condé Nast Traveler. She has written an article about her experiences as a screener called Inside Job in the current issue of the magazine. There are several different stations at a security checkpoint. Do people tend to specialize in one or the other, or do they rotate them?
No, everybody's supposed to be able to do every job there. Now, I was at the passenger checkpoint, and even there are about six different positions that you can rotate among. And, you know, you can be on the X-ray machine, you can be at the walk-through metal detector, or you get to poke through people's belongings and their bags.
Any more difficult than any of the others?
Well, it depends really on the person. I actually found the hardest one to be the one where you have this close physical contact with perfect strangers. I mean, the first time I really had to physically grope somebody, and there's no other way to put it, it was pretty disturbing, I must say. You know, I apologized as I was about to do this.
They tend to have you grope the women and men
yeah,
grope
oh,
the men?
Oh, yes. And that's another sort of reform that came about after 9/11, because in the old days, it didn't matter the gender of the screener. You know, you could be screened by a male, you know, even though you were female. And that, of course, produced a lot of complaints. And so now, yes, you have to have a screener of the same gender. But I got in trouble, actually, for apologizing. The supervisor scolded me and said, no, you must never apologize.
Because you're doing the country's work. It's our patriotic duty.
Yeah. Well, I think also they're concerned it would make us look too easy, you know, too nice, too accommodating.
I mentioned earlier, or you mentioned also, that these people are not paid all that well. Budget cuts have made it more difficult, haven't they?
Yes. Well, the main effect of the budget cuts has been to cap the number of screeners nationwide. And there used to be 60,000 screeners. And that was a few years ago when traffic was still down after 9/11. Now it's capped at around 45,000, I believe. But air traffic is way up. So do the math. I mean, they're really under a lot of stress.
And I guess it means more hours. And they actually do things to keep you on your toes, don't they?
Oh, yes. Yes. So you're constantly being watched and frequently tested. And one of the things they do is, if you're at the X-ray machine, they will superimpose something that looks like a weapon onto a perfectly innocent bag. So if you fail to detect too many of those, then you're out. You know.
What's the red team?
Oh, the red team, yes, which actually existed well before 9/11, but it's definitely been brought back in a big way. The red team is a group of undercover inspectors, and they go around to airports and they try to smuggle weapons through. And the reason they do this, of course, is to try to see how good the screeners are at catching them. And they find all sorts of ingenious ways to hide weapons. And, you know, of course, the results of these tests are supposed to be classified, but they get leaked periodically. And usually the results are pretty dismal.
Is that why you don't name the airport you worked at?
Well, there are a number of reasons. You know, I wanted to protect the privacy of my coworkers. I wanted to make sure that I didn't write anything that inadvertently would help somebody who had some bad intentions. So, yes. And, you know, I don't think there's that much difference between a very large airport, you know, like the one I was working at, and any other big airport.
Except that there usually are fewer people getting on the planes. Were you ever embarrassed by what you found while you were sifting through people's belongings?
Oh, yes. It would, you know, sometimes, you know, you really realize this is, you know, there's an, you just can't worry about being embarrassed because, you know, you'd see all sorts of things. And, you know, one guy actually got really mad at me and he started, you know, saying, well, you know, here, you can have this, you know, it's a, you know, you'll really get off on this, you know, or something, and I won't go
something
into
something private.
Yes, I don't think I should go into detail on the radio.
But people do carry things that might be embarrassing for others to see, perfectly fine things.
Oh, yes. And then the people who work at the checkpoint station where they open the checked luggage, they really had some stories to tell. And often passengers would put notes in there saying, you know, keep your hands off my stuff. And, you know, it got very interesting.
And don't some of them get – I've seen people get really angry. I've never gotten angry, even though sometimes I felt I was being pushed pretty far. Because I assume that if I get angry, it's just going to mean that somebody's going to pull me aside and make my life even more miserable. Is that generally how you treat those kinds of passengers?
Well, you would think so. But I was really astonished by the number of passengers who apparently, you know, felt free to abuse us. You know, they would, you know, insult us. And the worst thing was when they accused us of stealing from them. And that happened almost every day. And often it was just because their laptop or whatever was still stuck inside the X-ray machine. But, you know,
But things are stolen.
Yes. They actually, at the airport where I worked, in fact, they had busted a theft ring about a year or so before I got there. And that's happened around the country. But I do think TSA has really been going after that, and they really have been cooperating with authorities to find these people and arrest them. So I don't think it's as big a problem now.
As a seasoned traveler, you probably were accustomed to tuning out security personnel. How did it feel to be on the other side, trying to get people to comply with the rules that you had found annoying just a week before?
Yeah, well, I had a lot of sympathy for what they were going through because, frankly, you know, it isn't easy to understand all these rules. The rules are always changing. And in fact, I was there at a really interesting time. I was there right around the time they introduced this very convoluted, you know, the 3 ounces of liquids, gels, and aerosols. And it was a little disconcerting being on the other side and realizing, you know, I remember when these people were yelling this blather at me, and I, of course, ignored it. And now here I am, you know, now I know what it's like.
And people were finding women were having their cosmetics confiscated. Other things are confiscated. What happens to those things?
Well, the first thing you do usually is give someone the chance to go back outside and check it and put it in their checked baggage. Now, often that's just not a palatable option. I mean, the lines are really long, and they couldn't do it. So I guess at that point you ask them to surrender it, you know, which basically is the same as confiscation.
And then you sell it on eBay or something?
Well, that was one of the funnier things I found out. Apparently, at the very end of the day, you know, all the stuff that's been collected gets turned over to the local airport authorities. And what they do with it, I guess we don't really know. But I do understand that ultimately it ends up on eBay.
Now, who really controls all of this? Is this all federal government? Do the airlines get involved if it's screening for one airline? Does the airport get involved?
Yeah. Well, it's really a lot more complicated than at first I imagine it. It isn't just the TSA. Even though the airlines were technically kicked off the beat after 9/11, they're still in charge of a lot of it. The airlines still manage the pre-screening of passengers. You know, when you get that little sign on your boarding pass that you've been selected for additional screening, that's really through the airlines.
And what determines somebody getting picked? I know I was once, and I had no idea why, and then I was told it was because of something I had no control over. I'd gone to an airport in Washington, and the plane had been canceled, and they sent me to another airport, which meant that they had to change my ticketing. And then they said, well, you changed your ticket within the last 2 hours.
So you were a new passenger, in a sense, right. You're a new reservation. Yeah, well, exactly. That happened a lot. And I remember at one point that we got swamped with something like 25 travelers who had been, you know, bumped from a flight, and they all had to be screened.
And nobody said, well, gee, this is a special case. Obviously, these are not people who are just buying tickets at the last minute to avoid any detection.
The problem is that they have not updated the system. It's been in the works, and I know TSA has been trying to do it, but it keeps on running into all these, you know, bureaucratic hurdles.
Are there people who get VIP treatment?
I didn't see that, except as I mentioned in my story, Senator Hillary Clinton came through with the Secret Service detail, but that's she was allowed to go through a special lane, but that's because she had an armed escort.
But she was carrying explosive material. At least Barack Obama thought it was. So... I lost my train of thought.
As far as VIP goes, no. I mean, if someone is there as a normal passenger, they're supposed to get their, you know, baggies inspected just like everybody else.
Considering the fact that we all kind of know what the drill, do you think that a real terrorist would not be able to get around it?
I think it would be pretty hard. There is a lot about the system that has been improved since 9/11. And, while it's not as good as it could be, I still think it would be very hard.
So you're reassuring us that our airlines are pretty safe, except for the other part, like parts falling off and things like that, pilots.
No, there's still a lot to be done. I just think that the screeners are frequently made the scapegoats for the failures of the system as a whole.
How much do they get paid?
Well, my pay was $13.91 an hour. I was part-time. Screeners generally, I think the typical annual wage is around $23,000. But, you know, you can really increase that a lot with overtime. And because they have this hiring freeze, they do earn a lot in overtime, which is, you know, 1.5 times your regular pay.
Just one more thing. We got this email from a listener who says, as a full-time musician, I'm finding it increasingly hard to get my instruments onto planes for work. One of the main problems is that workers either don't know parts of instruments or they'll manhandle a very delicate instrument worth in excess of $10,000. Sometimes they ask you to check an instrument through the baggage system where damage is highly likely and the airline is not liable. Is this something that you are aware of? How many saxophones did you see?
Well, we did see some, yes. And in fact, there were a couple of days when some rock musicians came through and they had a lot of stuff. But generally, you can ask ahead of time and get the airline to help make special accommodations for you. But yes, if you're carrying it through the checkpoint, it does have to be screened.
So, Mr. Hyde, I hope you heard that. Just call the airline and tell them you're a musician and you want them to take care of you.
Well, they can make special accommodations to get it onto the plane with special care.
Barbara Peterson's article about working as an inspector for the TSA, a screener, is in the current issue of Condé Nast Traveler. It's titled Inside Job, My Life as an Airport Screener. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. You sure you're not going to tell us which airport you work at?
Sorry, I can't. Thanks very much for having me.